Okay. It is Tuesday, April 14th, 2026. Thank you, as usual, Monica, for handling the recording, and just for people to know, Monica just started doing that at one point. It's not like she, had to. She didn't apply for the position or. Have some special skills, just was doing service, so thank you. Because you might think, oh, like, how'd Monica get to be the cool person? So, don't. Just like a kind of a busy day ahead. We've got tonight, for those in the Bay Area, I will be at the Berkeley Buddhist Monastery at 7:30, 2304 McKinley Avenue in Berkeley. If anybody can make it there, that's great to see people in person. I'm also giving a little presentation for the Clinton Foundation this afternoon. So, busy day, and starting a retreat tomorrow. And I will add that these recordings get put on YouTube and on a podcast feed, which you can find on my website, or just, through podcast apps. And I'm pretty up to date. I think I did even the most recent, might have been last week's. That got put on there. So, if anybody, and it's something I'm interested, I know some of you presumably listen or watch these, whatever, whether, I often think, well, there's always like this silent 20-minute meditation in the beginning, and whether it would be better if I edited that out and just had the talk in. Okay, John says no, he likes the meditation. Okay, Karen agrees. Okay, great. Just that's fine. Yeah, because if
Some
it
other
was
people
me,
split it into like a Dharmat and the guided meditation.
yeah, it could be that, Michael. Thank you. And there's only one problem with that. It requires work. And I'm something like Maynard G. Krebs, for those who recall
All
his.
I said was I've seen other people do it
You've
that
seen
way.
other people do it.
Yes.
Yes. It's good. It's good. I like that. So if anybody wants to volunteer to take over that job, in the meantime, yeah. All right. It's not that my podcast is, winning a Webby or anything. So it's really just for a few who are interested. So all right, we will start with, as just mentioned, a period of meditation. I will give some guidance for the beginning, maybe the first half or so, and then let it be silent for the remaining period. Usually a total of 20 minutes, to be followed by some sort of verbiage. Excuse me. All right, just settling into a comfortable posture. Can close your eyes or just lower your gaze. It's worth taking some time to connect your attention with the body, with the posture, with the energy in the body, sensations, and finally with the breath. In the beginning of a period of meditation can be interesting when we kind of trying to move from our ordinary consciousness, the busyness of our minds, and shift into more of a observing mode, a mode of presence. So the mind might be busy and sweeping us along in thoughts and mental impressions. This is why we turn the attention to the body. So the mind tends to just kind of slip away. Can't sort of step in and ask it to slow down or to be quiet. Instead, we, in a sense, let the mind continue as it does, but let our focus be more on the body and the breath. And this isn't just some simple shift in attention. It requires a certain patience and gentle persistence. The mind tends to hijack our attention. So we keep interrupting that stream of thoughts that absorbs us, directing attention back to the body, to the breath. Feeling the breath rising and falling, moving in the body. As Ajahn Pasno says, the body is a mirror of the mind. So the emotions and disturbances of the mind show up as tensions and energies in the body. And we breathe with these, just feeling, just allowing. The spirit of this practice is non-conflict, non-resistance. And so there's an implicit loving kindness within our attention. A gentleness, an openness, receptivity. the busyness of the mind is reinforced by this sense that we need to control things or to change things to make something happen. And this practice invites us to let go of that attitude, to allow things to be as they are, whether they are pleasant or unpleasant. Not try to control the mind or the future or the past. This tendency to plan or to control or to fix is quite obvious in the thoughts that appear in the mind. If we start to look at what's showing up in our thoughts, but even when we let go of these grosser manifestations, we can sense the underlying angst in the body. Again, the body mirroring the mind. The fear or sadness or grief, wounds that trigger these problem-solving mechanisms of the mind. And once more, we try to meet these feelings with kindness, with acceptance, with the breath in the body. All right. People are well. I mentioned last week that I've been sitting again with Ajahn Pasno's book, Abundant, Exalted, Immeasurable. And if you don't aren't familiar with him, he's a actually Canadian monk in the Thai forest tradition, lived at with Ajahn Chah for some time back in the 70s before his health deteriorated, Ajahn Chah's health. And then he became the abbot of the International Monastery. So Ajahn Chah, with this great Thai forest monk, and after some Westerners, particularly Jack Kornfield and then Ajahn Sumedho, actually Sumedho was first, but they started to, they discovered him, and sort of the word spread, and a lot of Westerners started to come to Thailand to study with Ajahn Chah. And so he eventually decided that he would make a separate monastery for them, Wat Phnom Chat. And as I say, Ajahn Pasno became the abbot of that monastery for many years, back in the 80s and I think the early 90s, until he came back to be co-abbot of Abayagiri Monastery up here near Ukiah, California, with Ajahn Amaro. And that was when I became aware of the two of them in the late 90s. And Ajahn Pasno is particularly devoted to the practice of Anapanasati, the mindfulness of breath. And actually worked with him as I was writing a book on that topic. It's actually only available on my website as a PDF, because I couldn't. Shambhala wasn't interested. There were too many. They didn't like the fact that I quoted a lot of other teachers, and they were like, "Oh, it's too hard to get the rights to all that stuff." And I didn't. Wasn't sure I wanted to even really put it out as a, to sell it. So it is on my website. Exploring mindfulness of breathing through my own experience and through the writings of several other really well-known teachers, including Ajahn Pasno. So that's just a little bit of a background. This book, Abundant, Exalted, Immeasurable, is based on a loving kindness retreat that he taught in 2008. In fact, it's really just a transcription. It has the sound of, it really sounds like something spoken. But given his penchant for mindful breathing, it's not surprising that very early in the book, he devotes a chapter to mindfulness of the breath. And this chapter is called Mindfulness Immersed in the Body, which is I think it's a great, even title to kind of think about. And he starts out by reading a sutta from the Buddha, and I'm just going to read the first paragraph of this sutta. It says, "Bhikkhus, as one who encompasses with his mind the great ocean," wait a minute, "encompasses with his mind the great ocean," it's a strange sentence, sorry. "Even as one who encompasses with his mind the great ocean includes thereby all the streams that run into the ocean, just so whoever develops and cultivates mindfulness directed to the body includes all wholesome qualities that pertain to true knowledge." So the image, if I can clarify for myself at least, is that if you're thinking about the ocean, you're in. And to even think about the ocean, you have to also include all the rivers and streams, as he says, that run into the ocean. And so, in the same way, if you are mindful of the body, all the wholesome qualities that pertain, as he says, to true knowledge or to spiritual awakening, let's say, come along with that. And so the rest of the sutta sort of talks about all those qualities: a strong sense of urgency, great good, security from bondage, attainment of knowledge and vision. And so Bhikkhu Bodhi kind of uses the sutta as a jumping off point to talk about mindfulness of the body. And he makes this point, which relates to something I think I said, quoted him last week, saying that the mind, and I said this during the meditation, the body is the mirror of the mind. He says, sometimes trying to direct the attention to a mental state or an emotion is like trying to grab the wind. It slips right through your fingers. But having a good grounding in the quality of mindfulness that is focused on the body, you have a firm basis to build from. As the Buddha said, all of these wholesome qualities arise out of that mindfulness directed to the body. Once you have a stable base, then you have a foundation for building wholesome states. So this, as the meditation practitioners, you may have noticed that it is very difficult to kind of be mindful of your thoughts. Things kind of, mostly we recognize our thoughts in retrospect, just like a moment after we have the thought. Oh, I was just thinking this, right? So it's very hard to be actually present with thoughts or even emotions necessarily, but when we put attention in the body, the thoughts and emotions immediately are resonating there, and we can just be with them there. The other advantage is that the body doesn't have a story. There are no words in the body. And because words and thoughts and stories sort of pull us away from the present moment, being able to let go of those and just be with the felt experience moment by moment brings us into more of a direct experience of what I would say is the mind itself, that the body, and I've been talking about the nervous system a lot, it really is part of the mind. It's just another aspect of mind. So, what I thought I would, I hope that's clear enough as a starting point, but what I thought I would talk about, because I'm giving this presentation today, if we can call it that, I'm showing up anyway, for these faith leaders that the Clinton Foundation has this program, and they've asked me over the last few years to show up and talk about Buddhism and recovery. And I think about, well, what is it that we have to offer that's distinct from the 12 steps, that's distinct from any religious practice? And to me, it starts here with this sense of being present for our experience in the body, because that's where I think we can process this. When we, in our ordinary consciousness, when we realize we're thinking something and we try to sort of solve it through our minds, that can be useful. And that's kind of what psychotherapy does in a way, a simplistic way of putting it, but just for the purposes of this conversation, it all gets, it tends, tends to stay in our head. And as we, when we practice meditation, as we become a little bit more, I don't like to even say skilled at it, but experienced with it, start to realize that there's another world going on, and that the head is just like, the flower, if you will, of the plant, but that there's a stem and there's a root, and that all of that what comes up through those roots shows up then in this flowering, which sometimes is a very unattractive flower. You know, this is a very weird analogy, but sometimes I stumble into these things. And we get very fascinated with that flowering, with the thinking, with the thoughts, and analyzing, why am I like this, and what do I do, blah, 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 blah. But that thinking just keeps us on a cycle of thinking, and it doesn't really process the underlying, I just put it in generic terms, energy. You know, we could often these days people talk about it as trauma. I find that to be kind of a triggering term, and I'd rather think of it as just, you know, unpleasant, painful, difficult energies. So this practice, as and as I was talking about in the guided meditation, this practice invites us to meet these energies in the body with a kind of neutrality. And, you know, because if I say meeting it with love or acceptance, kind of sounds like, oh, I have to do something. I have to be some way with it. Whereas if I'm just like, I'm just meeting it, I'm allowing it. The way I experience that, the way I understand it, is that it allows these energies to get processed, to arise. First of all, to appear, because one of the things about these energies is that we spend a lot of time suppressing them. We spend a lot of time and energy suppressing feelings that we don't want to feel. And one of the big ways that we suppress them is by thinking about them and thinking that we're solving them and trying to fix them with our minds. You know, one of the great delusions of the human mind is that the human mind can figure and fix everything. And Buddhism is kind of like, as that sutta says, you know, wait, there's another way to understand this, to know this. And when I say the human mind, I'm talking about the neck up mind, the thinking mind, because as I say, I believe that the body is also the mind, and that when we include the body as part of the mind, and we allow that, then there's a processing that can happen that is healing. And healing doesn't mean that we stop feeling pain or discomfort. It actually means that we become capable of feeling pain and we become fearless. Don't like to again make, you know, absolute statements. Less fearful, let's say, you know, about letting feelings show up, and letting energies come through. And with time, there's a kind of equilibrium that gets established, or in the classical terms, equanimity. Just like, yes, I can feel this. I don't have to solve this. I can feel this. This can be difficult. This is life. It's okay. I'm going to continue on. And as we say in the 12-step world, do the next right thing. I think that's my talk. Trying to see if there was something that needed to go next, but you know, I can always ramble on some more. Shouldn't say ramble on because I was just watching an acoustic show that, or acoustic version of Ramble On that Robert Plant did. So that'll get me really going off. But anyway, so this is the challenge, you know, can I be here? And we can see how much of our lives before recovery and after, you know, there's abstinence, can get caught up in this solving, fixing without really penetrating and allowing this process to unfold. So I guess that, I mean, anyway, I'm just going to say thank you for your attention and open it up. I'm looking at the clock thinking I didn't talk long enough. Oh well, so there we go. Yep, Pam, hi.
Good morning, friends. Thank you very much, Kevin. I'm just trying to kind of workshop this in my head.
Good, good.
So let's say I'm sitting and doing my thing and noticing what's happening in my body. Is this what you're saying? Like, notice what's happening. Is it my stomach? Is it a tenseness in my shoulders? But to interpret that as, do I interpret that as a feeling coming up, and can I, let's for instance say, now remember I'm just thinking out loud.
No, it's fine. It's fine, Pam. And because I'm thinking in how I'm going to respond as you speak, so don't worry.
Let's say I'm sitting and I'm noticing my body and my neck and everything. All of a sudden, I start thinking about this resentment I have. And I'm, rather than go into the narrative of the resentment, just say, oh, there it is. Just like this pain in my neck is here, this uncomfortable feeling in my stomach, it just, there it is. There it is, within a neutral way. Is that what you're saying? Or,
Well, I'm
and
not
that
gonna,
will process the pain?
not exactly, but first of all, I'll say this is an intuitive process that when I talk about it, I'm not gonna be able to tell you what to do exactly. It's something you're gonna have to discover for yourself. Because it starts with feeling and finding some way of just knowing what you are feeling. And so, but let's put that aside for one moment because I want to come back to something a little even more simple because it's really important to try to keep this process as simple as possible. Because as soon as we start trying to figure it out, the mind takes over, right, and tries to solve it. So this is why the breath is so valuable here. It's not so much that we're like trying to feel particular sensations in the body, although that can be useful. It's not, but the point is more to breathe with the body, with the whole of the body, and just sense it as this energetic field, if you will. So it's a kind of shift in perspective. Instead of being like, oh, I'm going to focus here, my nose or my belly, or I'm going to notice my thoughts, there's this openness and a sense that the body can be felt as an energetic field. And indeed, that one can also experience the mind as an energetic field, but this is a more subtle and more difficult thing to get to and requires more concentration, I will say. But if you start by just sensing breathing and that there's breathing is always a rhythm, there's always this movement in it. And you start with just sort of being aware generally of the breath. Again, not trying to get really, minutely, what's the sensation here at the nostrils, but just kind of feeling yourself breathing and then start to just sense the underlying, and here there's a direct connection. When I talk about the body as an energetic field, I'm also talking about how you are feeling. And that's the language for that is like mood. Again, not like sort of trying to just n label like, but kind of not like, oh yeah, doctor, I have a pain in my knee. More like, Oh, there's kind of this heaviness or this sadness or this edge in there. It might not even be an emotional term like happiness or sadness. It might be it feels tight or it feels spacious or it feels flowing or, and so you're not. And we're not trying to find words in this process. I'm only using words to try to mention some of the kind of intuitive states that ways that you might attune this. So what then happens as you're working with this is that the mind keeps going. Like that's just what it's doing, but you're not really giving it a lot of attention. Then you realize, forgive the Star Wars reference, but there's a disturbance in the force, right? So this field is like the force, right? And when the mind starts to get, oh, I'm like planning or I'm worried or I'm mad or whatever, and then you realize, oh, this energetic field is disturbed. There's like, oh, and now I need to let me come back a little bit more to the breath. And we are using the breath then. Sometimes quite intentionally because what often happens, another way that this gets mirrored as, mirroring the mind, as Ajahn Pasno says, is that the breath becomes a little tighter or shallower. And then I will kind of go, oh, I'll take an intentionally deeper breath and I'll open up my chest and because what I'm trying, because what's happening here is the energy is getting closed down and tight. And that tightness of energy is just a reflection of the mental state, the mirroring of the mental state. But if I go to try to go right to the mental state, like, what's wrong with me? How can I, why am I worried about this? I shouldn't think about this or what? And it's all of that just spins me out. Not to say that, I mean, obviously we have to do some mental processing. In our lives, but in this process, in this meditative process, we're trying to stay out of that. And so we see, oh, just let me work with this as an energetic experience, not as a mental thing or as a problem in my life. I'm just going to breathe with it and see if I can just let go of that anger, anxiety, fear, sadness, boredom, whatever. And again, we come back then to the breath, and we kind of feel the energetic state kind of settling a little bit. So that's the best I can kind of describe it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for asking the question because it's really important. I know everybody's kind of got the same, questions around this, and I talk about this in One Breath at a Time, where, I talk about the feeling and that having my teachers say, your practice is to feel, and not knowing what that meant, and that was 45 years ago, and I'm still kind of figuring out what they meant, and I don't even try to figure out what they meant. I try to figure out what it means for me and how I can use that idea, and we talk a lot about. I mean, in a therapeutic context, we're asked, what are you feeling? And that there's a value in that, in identifying it, naming it, knowing what it is. And it's not really the end of the process because knowing that you're angry or knowing that you're anxious or whatever, obviously I'm talking about unwelcome feelings, doesn't get rid of it or solve it. This is actually a way, not of getting rid of it isn't a good term because that's aversion, but this is a way of processing those feelings that isn't intellectual. It's through the body. Elizabeth, hello.
Hi, Kevin. Nice to see you.
Yeah.
I just reminding you of something that you said during the retreat that I was on with you, where you said that people who practice Buddhism tend to be more skillful at letting go. You know, what in the category of what Buddhism and perhaps recovery can bring to this religious enclave. I thought that was
I did.
smart.
I'm
Yeah, you said
surprised I
that.
said that. But I'm always afraid when someone tells me they're going to quote what I said because I'm like,
Well,
oh
I thought
no.
I think you started with the idea of what this perspective that you have has unique things to give, and so that was just in the same category. So
Thank you.
putting you back to yourself, sorry.
I wouldn't want to make that statement to people outside our community necessarily, because it might sort of sound arrogant or, I will certainly say that that's what our kind of primary focus is how to let go. And letting go, it's such a obviously a really common phrase that I think much of the time people don't know what, if someone says, you got to let that go, I think most of the time people be like, I don't know how to do that. What does that mean? What am I supposed to do? And I sympathize with that. And that's where this practice comes in, because and why, some teachers say instead of letting go, let be, let it be, forgive me, and Paul McCartney. But meaning that letting go suggests that we're going to get rid of something. And that right away means that the question is, how do I get rid of it? And I don't know if anybody can tell you how to get rid of it, although, they will sell you a workshop or a book that'll tell you how to do it. But I'm not sure that'll actually answer the question. But the idea of letting be, allowing things to be as they are, again, non-resistance, non-conflict. The theory of that is that everything is unstable, everything is changing all the time. And so if you don't do anything, whatever it is you're having a problem with will change of its own accord. So just leave it alone. Don't do anything. Don't stir it up. And it will pass as long as you keep doing the next right thing. So John, go ahead. I was actually when Elizabeth was quoting me, I was and I was worried about what she was going to say. I was reminded of Southern Dharma when when I said that you were misquoting me, and then it was like you were actually quoting something I had said like 30 seconds before or something. It was very embarrassing. But public humiliation is a really good thing for Dharma teachers to experience.
So funny, Kevin.
You
Thanks for
remember that,
bringing.
I know.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I was thinking about it as she was asking the question
Okay,
as
I'm glad.
well.
Glad we're on the same page. It
But,
was something about
as
how
you.
I never say never, and you said you just say I never. You never do this, and I was like, I didn't say that. You were like, yeah, you did.
What I was want to respond to was how you started this and the fact that you're going to the Clinton Foundation to speak or do something, right, with
Yeah.
faith leaders, which
I
I
know.
find to be an
One of
interesting
those,
title of
yeah, I just
people, right?
do not care for that. It's like being a thought leader. Like, ugh.
Exactly. Well, and
Ugh.
then I thought, and then just as you were starting to talk about this, and you said, well, I'm not sure how I'm going to distinguish. And then I realized it's not about you having to distinguish Buddhism from them, because frankly, I think they're all derivative, from Buddhism when you get down to it. But I trying to explain what the difference is like,
Well, what's the difference between the air you're breathing right now and the air I'm breathing right now? It's almost, I think it would be a really difficult challenge. And this is, nobody's going to like this, but frankly, every other religion is capital based. They're not. Yeah, exactly. That's my opinion of organized religion. So, but again, I think going into it, good luck first. But I don't think you have anything to, I don't, I wouldn't try and distinguish it from them, frankly. But that's just my 2 cents worth. Good luck.
Well, no, I mean, the point for me is like, why do I do this? Why did I think that 12-step world needed something more? And I think I'm, I know there's a lot of things I can say about that, but yeah. The most important thing is they said they're going to give me a sweater with a logo on it, so I'm really looking forward to that. Well, and speaking of capital based, and don't forget to leave some Donna. Oh, you always do leave Donna, so sorry. Yes, I'm all about the making the money. We got time for maybe one more comment or question. I hope that anybody who is hearing this knows that I am joking about the money. Thank you. We don't charge for this thing. Anne, hi.
Good morning, Kevin. Good morning, everybody. Kevin, I just have a question. This is kind of unrelated to anything you've said this morning,
Great.
but one of the things that I do in the morning when I get up before I do just about anything else is I read your daily reflection. And yesterday's was about the awakening factor of investigation. And at the bottom, when you talk about or when you tell us the suggestion for today at the end, it said, today, ask yourself if you are truly engaged in your meditation practice. To strengthen the investigation factor, make sure you are alert when sitting and remain connected to the meditation object, not just vaguely paying attention to it. My question is, are we supposed to have an object to our meditation? I don't usually have one when I sit down. I just.
the term object, it's a term for, in most cases, the breath. So the breath is the
Oh, okay.
object. I know the word, it doesn't mean the goal. So that's a really good clarification, because we use that term in talking about meditation, and I don't think we're always clear that what we mean is the thing that you are paying attention to. So
Okay.
the breath is the breath, or the mind, or the whatever it is that is your focal point. That's called the object of meditation, and it is not the goal of meditation. Thank you, and I'm sorry to all the people who are reading my book and confused by that. Oh, God. Liz, I saw you had your hand up. I don't have to run right this minute, so be happy to hear from you.
Sure. I love the quick mention of the word fearless. For me, that has such a story and narrative behind it. So the idea of focusing away from that striving to be fearless, which doesn't feel realistic right now, and being just intimate with it in the body versus weaving a story around the shouldness of that. And that was just a really punctuated moment for me today. So, feeling the gratitude of that.
Thanks, Liz. I try to listen to myself when I'm speaking. It's part of my practice of mindful speech, and I don't succeed all the time for sure, but especially I try to catch these terms when I say something that's like making an absolute suggestion, like fearless, no fear. I'm like, wait, that's not a helpful. When we hear things like that, we get kind of pushed into a corner, and it can really be counterproductive. It's so interesting. Spiritual language really has a lot of minefields and little traps in it that we can fall into. So thank you. I appreciate that you appreciated that. Nice to have that be noticed. So thank you guys for being here. I will be back next Tuesday. I'll hopefully have my new logo to wear. So show that off, and we'll see if it fits. Anyway, hope everybody has a good day, and maybe some of you make it to the monastery tonight. Paolo, talking to you. All right, and try to be on time this time, okay? It's just if, yeah, I know you probably got a meeting you go to beforehand or so.
Wasn't nice.
All right, everybody.
Kevin, I'm just reminding you, I'll see you on the 12th. It's
Oh, you're not going to be here next week?
next few weeks,
Oh,
yeah.
a few weeks, boy. Oof. All right,
I
I'll
know, I
try to
know.
handle
You're in
it.
trouble.
I'll have to go back and look at your. Monica not only does this, but then she sends me all the instructions on how to handle it when she's away. And I'm like, oh, okay. Thanks, Monica. You're the best.
I would be here, and I'm here all as much as I can be. So,
Yeah,
yeah.
I know you do a great job.
Okay.
You sure do, Monica.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks, Steve. Are you feeling better?
Yeah, I still got the COVID. Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah,
I'm
it's all right,
sorry.
guys. All
It's all
right.
right. I'm surviving. Thank you,
Thank
guys.
you.
Thanks, Kevin.
All right, take care.
Thank you so much.
All right.